Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles on this very chilly Sunday
it's
evening.
It's a little chilly. Yeah.
A little chilly.
A little rainy.
A little drizzly. Dreary. We are sans Juan this evening.
We are without him.
So... this will be interesting to see how
Alas.
It goes. We were like looking around like, hey, how do we do this again? What buttons do we push?
Right.
In fact, I think if you are on the live stream right now, it took us quite a while to get going, but we were streaming while you guys were watching us figure this out. We also forgot to, we were like, okay, we got it going. We forgot to pray. Is everything okay?
Yep.
Okay, just making sure. See, we're up.
So after the last episode, I was up here with Father Carvajal, showing him a bunch of stuff, messing with a bunch of stuff.
Oh.
One of them was the levels on our mics.
Oh.
And I just remembered.
So you just remembered?
It's good. We're good.
Okay, good.
Just don't yell.
Jim is here as well.
Our white chocolate porter.
Lucky to have him here.
He loves it. I can't tell you how much he loves it when we say that.
He has the very warm Catholic Man Show stocking cap.
Looking
on.
Very good.
Look at that.
There
Boom,
it is.
There it is. You can find that at thecatholicmanshow.com/store.
Really funny story about these hats. Adam and I were in Pennsylvania a couple weeks ago. A couple months ago. It was at the end of last year.
Right.
And we're speaking. And so like they gave us a table, but we didn't. You know, we're flying in. We didn't really have stuff to put on the table.
We did, but we just didn't want to bring it.
Well, we didn't have it with us, is what I mean.
Right.
We did. So we did have some hats. And so we put the hats out. And we're sitting there. We were speaking at the end of the conference. And
bat and cleanup.
Yeah. And so we're sitting at a table with like 7 or 8 beanies. And that's it. And so people kept coming up to us and saying... What are these?
Yeah.
And they look at their sock. You know, we've got like a leather logo on the front, kind of. It's like a mountainous
nice.
Camping scene.
Yeah.
And finally, after like the third or fourth guy that came up and asked me the same question, the guy at one of the vendor tables next to me just looks over and goes, someone goes, so what are these for? And I'm sitting there trying to explain like, well, my partner who's not here right now, because you were off like getting coffee or something, we have a podcast. And the guy's like, yeah, so what are the hats for, right? And like it kept happening. So finally this guy's like, what are these for? And the guy at the vendor table next to me goes, they're to keep your head warm. And I was like, thank you. Yes. Thank you, sir. Sir, they're to keep your head warm. That's what they're for. They're beanies and they keep your head warm. We have a podcast.
Have a good day.
We'll also be speaking at the end of the conference. Yes, it's free. You can have it. I hope your head stays warm.
Then we got this, an old guy that came up and goes, oh, my granddaughter would really like this. And we're like,
that's cool.
Okay.
She probably would. Yep.
And he took one. We're like,
does she frequently complain about chilly head?
Yeah. Or listen to
yes,
the Catholic
Man Show. Yes, she would love it.
Okay, so a first of the Catholic Man Show this evening. We are going to try a French whiskey.
I didn't even know the French made whiskey. I didn't know they had it in them. But they do. Apparently they do.
Single barrel French. Now, if you're on the...
maybe it's really good.
The stream, you can tell why we went ahead and bought the bottle. Because it's not a bottle. It's a handmade 8th century knight.
Is it handmade? The bottle is handmade?
Handmade,
what does
that
mean?
I don't know. That's just what they... That's how they market it, at least. But okay. It's a 8th century knight.
I wonder if handmade and means that they like...
I don't think I actually said what the name of it was. It's Chivalry.
Mm-hmm.
French whiskey single barrel. 40% ABV.
Let's try it.
You have to unscrew the helmet.
You rip the head off.
You rip.
Which I like.
Okay. This is one of those whiskeys, like... It could be terrible. We don't know. So it was about a $60 bottle.
30 of that is the bottle itself. Let's be honest. Let's give credit where it's due. Yeah. It is a sweet bottle.
Even if we don't drink any more of this after tonight, it will make a cool thing to put in
even,
the studio.
Even if this whiskey is so terrible, we have to pour it out. God forbid.
Right.
At least we'll still have this awesome bottle that we can do other stuff with in the future.
So it says it features a custom-made, handmade bottle resembling a knight from the 8th century. The mastery of each handmade bottle extends to the liquid inside with a crafted blend of French whiskey. You'll experience notes of gentle malt, honey, vanilla, and oak.
So the detail on the bottle is really pretty high. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm impressed.
So the blend, so it's a blend, and it's only a 2-year aged whiskey. So,
okay,
at least the youngest of the blend. It is a light color, lighter color. So let's try it. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers, cheers, Jim.
Honestly, it smells pretty good.
It does smell good.
Yeah.
A sense of cinnamon, mm-hmm. apples. Tart, vanilla.
Yeah. It's got, it's kind of it's a sweet smell. It's not,
yeah.
I was thinking, oh, it's probably going to be hot on the nose, being only 2 years old. Well, it could be, most of it could be well older than that, but not, you don't look like those are happy faces.
The palate is very non-existent almost.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the finish has a little bit of a little bit of a finish.
Yeah. It's not bad.
It's not bad.
There's nothing in it that's bad.
But like the palate in like when you're drinking you're like, "Wait, is this a whiskey?"
Wait, where'd it go? Where'd you go?
Yeah. Am I swishing around water or is this whiskey?
Yeah, I mean there could be more flavor. I'll say
there's not a lot of flavor.
You almost didn't break Exodus 90 drinking this.
Yeah, Jim said we almost didn't break Exodus 90 by doing this.
You could almost drink this on Exodus 90 and not violate the rules.
It does. Yeah, it does not.
Although, once again, it's not bad. So, let's say you are trying to get into the whiskey game. This could be a really great whiskey to start off on. Because it's not going to offend you.
I don't think I've ever had a whiskey where on the palate I go, you know what? I don't think I could tell you a flavor. It's really bizarre. I mean, the finish, then the finish, you actually do get a little bit of vanilla and oak.
Yeah, at the end, there is some, you're right, vanilla and oak, maybe some apple, but
that's it.
When it's in like, your mouth, it is. I don't even know how you do that.
I don't either.
How do you pull that off in a beverage?
It's impressive.
The bottle, though.
You know what, though? This would be the bottle. The bottle is awesome. Check that out.
I'm not kidding. It is a nice bottle. But when I saw it, I told Adam, I'm a little bit suspicious because that bottle is so nice. It makes me think.
What's inside is not.
This conversation took place. Guys, it's just not selling. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to spend $15 to $20 on a bottle, and we're going to double the price. Because it was $60.
I'll bet this
used to sell for like $30 or under until they put this sweet bottle out on the shelf.
Well, it was well done. Well done by the Frenchmans.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
What's it? It's called Chivalry.
Chivalry, yes.
I have never seen this.
I haven't either. That's why I had to get it.
The bottle is so nice that when you see it, you might not realize it's a bottle. You might think, oh, look at these cool knight statues they have. I wonder why they have so many of these knight statues on here with all the whiskey.
Right. It's really nice. So, Dave, we are starting this week the book club. I'm starting two book clubs this week.
Wow.
I'm starting the one on the Patreon, our book club on Orthodoxy by G.K. Chesterton. Yeah. And then you and I are participating in a book club with Deacon Harrison Garlick and Dr. Melosh and a couple other people.
The Divine Comedy.
Yes. The Inferno. Yeah, just The Inferno. We're going to read that through Lent.
Which I have never read before. Very excited. It's one of those books I've waited to read because I knew that there is so much, like, there's a lot of allegory. It's an allegory. There's a lot of context behind what's going on. And a lot of the characters in the story are, actual historical people.
Mm-hmm.
And the things or what they're known for in life have a lot to do with
what level of
what's happening to them in the story, right?
Right.
And so it was one of those. It's a book that I wanted to read with somebody who knew what was going on. I'm excited about that because Deacon Garlick is.
He knows.
He knows his stuff, especially with this book.
Right. And he knew it's very important what translation you're going to use.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's very critical. And so we're using for those who are just curious, we're using the Mark Musa's translation from Penguin Edition. Or Penguin Publishing. Yeah. He has great notes on for each canto. So anyway, I'm excited about doing both of those book studies, book clubs.
We'll be right back. Hey guys, David Niles here. For those of you who don't know, for my day job, I'm a financial advisor, so I know firsthand how difficult investing can be. That's why I was so excited when we met Mark Lozano, founder and owner of Christ-Centered Capital. Mark's mission is to provide in-depth research and analysis on which companies and organizations align with Christian values and which ones don't. Of course, he's also seeking to provide investment recommendations and stock picks that have financial potential and are also aligned with Christian values. What I really love about what Mark is doing is that he's completely transparent about why a company might be a moral investment versus another one. He leaves it up to you so that you can make informed decisions. He's not just going to say, oh, this one's moral, this one's not. He'll give all of the reasons in the research that he's done with links to articles or whatever it may be, so that you can make the most informed decisions on your own investment portfolios. Because as Catholics, we have a duty to uphold Catholic values, and the same goes with our investments. So we want to be as virtuous as we can be, and Christ-Centered Capital is really invaluable. It's only $7 a month for you to go and sign up to get all of his recommendations and all of his research. To me, it's a no-brainer. If you're an investor and you want more information, go to ChristCenteredCapital.com and make sure to use promo code TCMS 2022 for 1 month of free access, no obligation. That's TCMS, The Catholic Man Show, TCMS 2022. Welcome back to The Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We've got Jimbo Baggins in the house, so we feel okay. Otherwise, if it's just Adam and I would feel very exposed. We wouldn't even have Juan to, like, throw at a intruder or something, you know, to hide behind or something. I don't know. People have asked us, why are we so worried about people coming into the studio? I also don't know about I don't know.
We don't live in a bad part of town.
No. Actually, the truth is I'm not worried about it at all. But it makes for a good joke every now and then, I guess, so we keep doing it.
One thing about the Catholic Man Show is once we find one good joke, we
will stick to it.
Burn through it till it is gone.
We're tenacious.
Yes. Some say we persevere.
Yeah, and the thing is, we have very little live feedback. So, you know, like when you tell a joke that's not funny, you can get that lack of feedback. We can't even get that.
Mm-mm. So we just keep going with
it. Right, so in our minds, at least I'll tell you in my mind, when we make these kinds of jokes, they kill.
Yeah.
Like, everybody out there is just rolling.
Hey, so this week also, we have the Oklahoma Catholic Men's Conference. It's coming on Saturday. I'm really excited about that because I got to tell you, Dave, you and I have been to a few of these. We've been to several men's conferences, right?
Oh, you mean like other men's conferences?
Other men's conferences.
Oklahoma, like, I really think that they're the best of, like, the men's conference.
Top three that we've been to for sure.
Definitely top three. But they have just, I think,
the logistics.
A great balance of how many speakers do you have versus, downtime between speakers, other activities that are going on. Because some men's conferences I've been to, it's like too much. It's like, all right, speaker, straight into adoration, straight into lunch, straight into, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's like
no
a
time
machine
to think
gun
about
fire.
It, right.
No time to like talk about it, a talk with the guys you came with
right.
afterwards. You know what I mean? Anyway.
No time to digest the talks.
It is not too late to get your tickets.
No, they're actually going to accept 100 walk-ins as well.
But also you could go online to, what do you remember
it's,
what it is?
It's catholicmen.net.
Catholicmen.net. What a great URL.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It's well actually, done. So I was talking to Ray Heffley, who is the coordinator, and he's not the founder, but he's the coordinator.
He has been for a long time.
He told me that he believes that this is the longest running Catholic men's conference in the nation.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is due to him specifically.
Right.
He's got a great team. But anyway.
So excited about that.
Go to catholicmen.net. Get your tickets. Come. It's going to be really great. You can come see us. We'll be there. We'll have a table with maybe like more than a few beanies.
Maybe.
Also, in some other news, it's happening, people. All right?
What is happening?
We're going on a pilgrimage to Ireland.
Oh, yes.
We have the deets.
We have the details.
The deets have been finalized. We're going to have another podcast come out very shortly that's just about that. But the first 8 people to sign up before St. Patrick's Day, which is coming up soon, will get an extra special bonus if you come with
dinner
us.
Dinner with drinks.
Private dinner with us on one of the evenings.
With free drinks.
Free drinks, free dinner.
Free dinner, yeah, with us. So
in a, like, Irish awesome place, so.
In a distillery, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's pretty sweet.
So I want to get to the man gear, because we have some good man gear stuff today.
Okay.
So
as opposed to?
Lame man gear stuff. And I mean, like, what do we know about the man gear? I actually, like, looked up the history of this particular thing.
Perfect. Let's hear it.
So what I have in my hands, if you're on the podcast, is an oscillating tool. This is a DeWalt oscillating tool.
Dave, what's an oscillating tool?
An oscillating tool is a tool that cuts stuff. Except unlike a saw, where a blade spins, this goes back and forth.
Vibrates almost?
It's like a vibrating saw. And so I have my fingers on the blade. I can turn it on. And it will not cut you. You want to touch it?
No, thank you.
Touch it. Come on.
It's okay.
All right.
Last time I fell for that, my finger started bleeding.
That was my finger.
Oh, with the
it was my own
pocket
finger.
Knife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I can't believe you knew what I was talking about.
It wasn't your finger. It was my finger. I was on my own knife.
We were on...
In my own hand.
We were only...
Like 5 only, or 4.
I don't know how old we were, but...
Under a chair.
You're like, look how sharp this blade is, and you ran your finger right across
just
the blade.
Started bleeding. It's like, oh man. The thing is, like, I remember it didn't really even hurt.
Because it was a clean cut.
Yeah. It really was sharp. I'm surprised. My dad got it from like a vendor at work, and he came home. He's like, "Here, son, here's your first pocket knife." Anyway, so this oscillating tool is awesome.
Okay, tell me about it.
The oscillating tool was in. It goes back to the 1800s. It was a development that came out of the medical field because they needed a way to cut a cast off of people without damaging the patient again. Right. So they had been using circular saws to cut casts off, or like hacksaws, and it was it took a long time, and it was painful, often painful for the patient, right?
Do you imagine the trust you'd have for a guy who's like, okay, use this hacksaw for my cast, but you better do not go too far.
Yeah, well, it's like, how do you know when to stop? Well, when the patient starts screaming that's when you know.
Yeah.
So they needed a way, and so this company called Fein, F-E-I-N, it's a tool company in Germany still to this day. They were founded in 1867. They developed the first oscillating saw that, because your skin is not rigid, it kind of moves back and forth. The blade goes back and forth just a tiny, tiny bit. And so it won't cut your skin. It won't cut anything that's not stiff and rigid. So it will cut through a plaster cast. They were plaster back in the day. Cut through the cast today.
What about a rigid Catholic?
Now, that is a good question.
I mean,
I do not know. I'm going to say yes. Anyway, so the reason why this is awesome is because it will cut through anything, basically. It's sort of like a Sawzall in that way, where you just put the metal blade on, it'll cut through metal. Put the wood blade on, it'll cut through wood. They have diamond blades that you can use to cut through countertops or like tile.
Mm-hmm.
And because of like the way they are, you can get them into like nooks and crannies.
Because the saw is only, that's only about an inch wide.
And that's just this particular one. You could get narrower ones, wider ones.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
A lot of detail work, it seems like, with this.
You can do detail work with it. And they have, because it's just oscillating, they have all kinds, you can use it for sanding. They have sanding attachments. Like if you need to sand in like a nook or something like
that. What about a cranny?
A cranny? Yeah, dude. You could sand all up in a cranny.
Man.
So, it's awesome. This is I got this one recently from our friend Juan Posada.
I do
know him. He gave it to me as a thank you gift. I had been helping him do some renovations in his home, and
which is why he's not here.
He's actually still renovating. Mm-hmm. He was doing some trim work, and I was like, "Look, dude, you're really gonna need like this is the best way to go. You could go get something called a jam saw and do it, but like, forget that. I mean, you need power tools." So he got me. He got me one too, because I told him like I've always wanted one of these. This one's wireless. Fine, the original company, their patent expired in 2006, and so these did not really exist. These oscillating tools really did not exist in the U.S. or really anywhere outside of like professional or extreme hobbyists. So unless you were like a carpenter or some kind of hardworking professional, you didn't have one of these. In 06, when the patent expired, you saw DeWalt, Bosch, Milwaukee, you know, they all started coming out with their own version of this oscillating tool. Personally, this is one that I really like having having cordless.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also one that it wouldn't be a big deal if you had it corded, because typically for most people, you're using this in like one area. It's not like a drill where you're going to be walking around like all over a job site using your oscillating tool to cut stuff, probably. However, it uses the battery pretty heavily. So, but I just like in times when I've needed or used these, it's usually for a small job, you know, like I need to cut something, I cut it, and then I'm done. You know, it's not like I'm sitting there using it forever and ever and ever. If it is something that you're going to be you think you'll use a lot, it probably is worth it to still actually go get the original Fein, because they, it's F-E-I-N. Their product is still really better. Things like the vibration in the handle when you're using it is about half. So if you're sitting there using that thing for a long time, it's going to really wear out your hand. In fact, I have a blister on my hand from using my Sawzall yesterday for a long period of time. I had gloves on, but still.
Were you at the Clear Creek Workday?
I was at the Clear Creek Workday.
I was there too.
I was using my Sawzall all over. I was just cutting stuff. You know just what I mean?
Cutting things down.
And so it's got some good vibration to it as well. So
like the Beach Boys?
Yeah, just like that actually. And so anyway, I have a blister from using it. So if this is something you're going to be using a lot, go get the. It is more expensive.
What is the DeWalt one? Right?
So this one online is like 120.
Okay.
If you go to Lowe's or Home Depot, it's going to be about 140, 150.
Okay.
So I'm not like trying to pump Amazon, but it is like $30 cheaper. You know. But to me, it's a. If this is a multi-tool that you will use around the house. If you're a homeowner,
it's one of those tools I didn't realize that I really would like.
It can replace a lot of the other tools. You probably won't need a hacksaw anymore. There's a lot of tools that will become obsolete once you have one of these. It's awesome.
What are we going to talk about this evening?
Words.
Which ones?
The hard ones.
The hard words.
Words are hard.
All right, we'll be right back.
One of our best episodes to date was with a guest that we had, and his name was Father Sean Donovan. He's a priest of the Diocese of Tulsa in eastern Oklahoma, and he is the one who introduced us to the Winged Hussars. If you have not listened to that episode, go check that out. And so when we were thinking about going on a pilgrimage to Ireland, we thought there is no better person to go with than Father Sean Donovan. He's Irish. He has forgotten more things than we will ever know. He is a holy priest, and he's a good friend of ours who loves a dram or a beer and can help us navigate through Ireland. And that's exactly what we're going to do with select international tours. We have a whole pilgrimage coming up this year. It'll be in September, and it'll be like no other pilgrimage that's ever been done before. When we were organizing it with select international tours, they were laughing and kind of saying, I can't believe we're going to do this. This is going to be a pilgrimage like no other. We've never organized a pilgrimage like this before, and here's the reason why. We're not only going to be hitting all Catholic sites and having the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass celebrated every single day, but we're going to be having private tours in distilleries and breweries for just the Catholic Command Show. So we are basically renting out distilleries all through Ireland to have private tastings, to be able to try different whiskeys that aren't available to the public, to be able to understand how whiskey is made, plus just getting a chance to see how beautiful Ireland is and all of the other Catholic sites. So if you've ever thought about joining a pilgrimage, if you've been wanting to travel but haven't had a chance to, join us on the first ever Catholic Man Show pilgrimage with Father Sean Donovan. Vaccinations are not required. They're easing up on all of COVID restrictions, so that should not be an excuse to not be able to come. Go to selectinternationaltours.com/catholicmanshow to find out more information. That's selectinternationaltours.com/catholicmanshow. We hope to see you there in Ireland. Cheers.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Sipping on a little bit of this Chivalry French whiskey. My thoughts on this whiskey have not changed since the beginning.
I'm really trying. I'm decided not to make any French jokes because of the topic for today. It would be awfully bad for me to do that. So I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I'm not going to make any of those jokes.
Well done.
Thank you.
Way to temper yourself.
Thank you. I'm so virtuous. So virtuous.
Okay, so this evening we're going to talk about language. We're going to talk about words. We're going to talk about the importance of language, I'm assuming.
Yes. So this is just something that I personally struggle with. When I go to confession...
Ooh, I like to talk about things you personally struggle
this
with.
This is it. You're going to love to. You're going to love today's episode.
Okay.
When I go to confession, I find myself very often confessing sins of this nature, like... just a lack of temperance with my words, right? Where not that I'm saying things that are untrue. I'm simply saying things that didn't need to be said, that are not positive, you know? So like sort of whether it's backbiting, which we've done an episode on.
Dang it. Aquinas calls that a mortal sin.
Well, he calls it grave matter.
Grave matter, yeah.
Yeah.
Good distinction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So go and listen to our, if you don't know what backbiting is, go in the search, in, like just search.
Backbiting.
You'll find it. I don't know what episode it is, but we did an episode on backbiting. Basically, it's where you're not gossiping about someone. You're saying true things about someone that are just not charitable. And like I find myself doing that sometimes, you know? And then a couple weeks ago, we had a series of readings through the, you know, the daily readings that were all about the words of a man, whether it was James chapter 3, which we'll get to, or some from maybe it was Proverbs. I don't remember exactly what they were, but they were just basically, they really stood out to me, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, and so I just said, let's talk about it. Because it's something that I think a lot of people probably struggle with.
I think you may be the only one.
But I think this is one of the notable characteristics of saints is that they have bridled their tongue and that they know and have learned how and when to remain silent. It can be very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was doing some research for this episode, I was looking up Bible verses that all talk about this, and it was overwhelmed. I had no idea how many. I'm pretty sure if I had listed them all, it'd be over 100 different references in the Bible to basic, like, guard your words, be careful what you say. So I'm just gonna like read some of these real quickly.
Okay.
I tried to pick ones that were a little bit different. So Exodus 20 verse 7, you shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. I wanted to put this one first. You shall not take the Lord's name in vain. One of the Ten Commandments, right? This is like the prime example of using words, because the things that we say matter. And
yeah, when you profane the sacred, that is a big deal.
Right. So it's not like, you know, it's like words are one thing, but I'm not doing anything bad. No, words are a deed themselves. That's the point. That's the main thing, is that the words you say can bring about spiritual harm or healing. Okay, mm-hmm. So we have to choose. We have to be wise and charitable, because the words that come out of our mouths have power. Okay?
Yeah, so I didn't know if I was going to bring this up or not, but that kind of opened it up for me to step in. Can I step in?
Please, yes.
Because I wanted to... So when you told me that we were going to talk about language tonight, I was like, oh my gosh, this is providential maybe, because I'm reading this book on the side, outside of the two book groups that we're doing.
Yeah.
It's called The Formation of Chrysostom, and it's by Christopher Dawson, who was a British dude who ended up... he used to be a teacher at Harvard, and he was like known as a Catholic theologian and philosopher of the 19th, 20th century that was really, really well known, and he's very profound. And he makes this argument, or he makes this stance, that language is the foundation of culture, and that even before civilization, language is what built up. It separates us from the animals, right? He makes this distinction that you can teach a monkey to ride a bicycle, but you cannot teach a monkey to use language. You know,
to say I love you.
Yeah, for language,
and or at least to mean it.
Right.
You actually might be able to teach him to say it. I don't know, but
not a full like a language.
Right.
And so he says, actually, he makes this argument that language is the foundation of culture. And that words have this meaning, and that, you know, with Christ being the Logos, Christ being the Word, that he, I want to read this because I don't want to mess it up, but it was,
right.
So it was so
it's
great.
One of the things that separates us from the animals, and like one of the things that we're made in the image of God,
right. And so he says in here that God not only is the giver of revelation, But he must also create a vehicle for its transmission and the faculty for its reception.
Right.
So Christ, being the Logos, you know, is he's not only the Word, but then he also creates a language in order for to transmit his love to us, but then also for us to understand and receive his love from us. A very Trinitarian.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so just think about that. It's one of those things that's very simple that you kind of taken for granted, but the fact that we can speak is incredibly powerful.
Which you can see also, like, the degradation of culture when language gets abused, right? We even had an episode, I think we saw Abuse of Language, Abuse of Power by the Peepster.
Yeah.
And you can, because words have such a strong meaning, that those in power and those to, you know, powers to be, when they abuse language, they abuse it for their own good in
Try
order
to conflate words, you know, like shift things so that, oh, well, you know, it's like, oh, let's not use the word abortion. Let's call it women's health. You know, stuff like that.
And that's what culture has developed.
That's the abusive language.
Right.
So, I would use that example because you can, in fact, commit mortal, commit mortal sin with your words alone. You don't have to kill somebody with your deeds. You know, your words alone could send you to hell. That's the thing. Here's another one from the Ten Commandments. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor.
Lying.
Right, so the words we choose.
We had a great conversation in the chancery this week on what is lying. By the way, if you are curious, Pat Flynn, a buddy of ours who's been on the show several times, he just hosted a debate with Dr. Brian Bisong and Jimmy Akin on the morality of lying.
Really?
Yeah, just last week. It was a great debate. And I think they're even going to go around too. So if you just look up Bisong, Bisong, and Akin on YouTube, you can find it.
Sweet. Proverbs 11, verse 9, by a word, the impious ruin their neighbors. Proverbs 21, verse 23, to watch over the mouth and tongue is to keep out of trouble. By the way, the book of Proverbs is incredible. It's just like verse after verse, wisdom bomb after wisdom bomb.
It's almost like it's a proverb.
Yeah, dude.
Every time.
Proverbs 15, verse 4, a gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Proverbs 18, verse 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Luke.
Do you think that we've lost the art of remaining silent?
I think so, because we're just so bombarded by noise all the time. Like, we tend to, because that's what we input, we output the same thing. That I think people, A, are afraid of silence, and so we fill it with more noise, even if we're the ones having to make it. And so in that anxiety that is present often inside, when you're uncomfortable with silence, it's anxious. You're liable to say some things that are, you know, improper.
I see that a lot with introverts, right? Whenever you're in discussions with them, that they get so almost, they get a little, like I had dinner this evening with a priest here in the diocese, and he was talking about how he was an introvert. And it's just so funny that he was an introvert, because through the whole dinner, he was talking. And knowing that we were going to talk about this, I was like just kind of paying attention, like thinking about language and like, you know, when to speak, when not to speak. I think, I kind of made this connection. Like, I think it's because he doesn't know what to do with silence with people around, because he's an introvert. He's used to silence. And then he gets this anxiety of, oh, I guess I got to be talking because there's people here and we're supposed to have a conversation. And so he just keeps going, has this kind of nervousness about him.
Silence has such a power to it. Like, I'm sure everyone can think of an example of someone who's like wise or well regarded. You ask them a question, and the first thing they do is they sit there. And they just, you know what I mean? They just think, and that like silence, like
it draws
everyone in. It's like, what's he going to say?
Right.
You know, there's something captivating about when you wield silence well. So anyway, I have this, there's just a long list. It's just incredible of just the verses. I'll just read a couple more. Luke 6, 43 and 45. For no good tree bears bad fruit, nor again does a bad tree bear good fruit, for each fruit is known, each tree is known by its own fruit. Figs are not gathered from thorns, nor are grapes picked from the bramble bush. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart produces good, and the evil man out of the evil produces evil. For out of an abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. You know, so what's in, what's the words that we use are a litmus test for what's inside of us, right? Which is why the next verse I'm going to give you is so important.
Okay. This is also why, like, when Fulton Sheen said that he would spend twice as much time in adoration as he did giving talks, he would be filled up with Christ in order to give out.
That's right. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Okay, guys. March 2nd is Ash Wednesday. That means over a billion people are going to start living different in some way. Maybe giving up chocolate or alcohol or whatever. For a lot of Catholics, Lent is a time of finding the easiest way to give something up. But at the end of those 40 days, did that sacrifice really make a difference? This year, there's a new opportunity out there specifically for men that will actually help you grow closer to God and become a better man. You've heard me talk about Exodus 90 probably several times, but let me tell you about Exodus Lent. It's a 40-day journey that will challenge you to dig a little deeper. If your first reaction is, bro, I'm absolutely not taking cold showers. Well, then you're in luck, my friend. Men who take on the Exodus Lent get to take warm showers. They get to drink alcohol, and when you're with others, watch TV and sports. But don't be fooled. This will still be a challenging 40 days of preparation for living the Christian life for the rest of your life. Let me tell you how it works. First, over the 40 days of Lent, men commit to daily prayer, setting aside a minimum of 20 minutes to spend with the Lord. Each day includes a scripture reading and reflection written to help men better understand, grow in, and live virtue. Second, more than just giving up chocolate, men take up a range of disciplines and sacrifices for the season of Lent. Sweets, snacks, social media, all gone. Third, men commit to a fraternity of 5 to 7 men. Each week the fraternity meets to pray together, check in, hold each other accountable, and encourage one another. On Easter Sunday, you'll walk away with a new and lasting understanding of what it means to live the full Christian life. Chocolate bunnies and all. Sign up now at exoduslent.com/TCMS, short for The Catholic Man Show. That's exoduslent.com/TCMS. Welcome back to The Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, we're talking about our words. So one of the verses we had in our readings recently, and I'm just scanning through this list here, I'm almost positive it's here, but basically it was saying to judge, don't judge a man until he speaks. Because of that verse I just gave you about, you know, it's what's in the man's heart that comes out of his mouth, and so by a man's words, you can judge him, is basically what it was saying. Not as if you're going to condemn him, judge him, go to heaven or hell. Not that kind of judging. But, you know, if you're trying to make a determination of his character, then those are the kinds of things you should look for. And, you know, like, I think, you know, we all know people who cannot, like, every other word is a cuss word. And it just wears me out.
I didn't notice that.
I think I used to be that way.
Yeah, me too.
When I was younger. And one thing I've noticed since then is that whenever I'm around those people, it's infectious. If you're around someone who's using a lot, using foul language, all of a sudden I catch myself later on about to say a word that I would never use. And I have to, like, whoa, hold it back. And it's like, where did that come from?
Importance of the people you surround yourself with.
Exactly, yeah. But it just is, I think it's probably it means that that person has little restraint in other areas of their life too. You know, they're also probably not very creative. If you use, you know, certain words all the time, means that you probably are not that good at thinking of creative solutions to problems in general. That's what I would guess, but, you know, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. So the thing I think to really, I wanted to come at this from three different angles.
Okay.
The way we speak about the Lord, the way we speak about others, and then the way we speak about ourselves.
Okay.
So words have a way of forming us. The words other people use have a way of forming us. And then the words that we use certainly have a way of forming us. It happens, of course, that maybe an idea occurs to you. Oh, like, ooh, say this. This would be funny. This happens to me all the time. Tell this joke. You used to tell this joke a lot, and it always makes people kill. Yeah, exactly. But I know now that, like, that's not really appropriate. You know, that's not the kind of, a saint wouldn't make that joke. But when that occurs to you, and when you say it, there's a form of consummation that takes place with that idea. You have now become one. You've given in and, like, kind of given yourself over to this idea, this concept.
What do you mean?
So, like, if you're just say it. Use this word. Say, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. When you give in to that and you speak it, now you have given almost flesh to that temptation.
Yeah, it's manifested.
Right. You've consummated with it. And so you have become one with it, and you can't really take it back. You can go and be forgiven, whether you're doing it out of anger, mm-hmm. or out of, you know, trying to impress the wrong kind of crowd, whatever it may be, whatever it is, just, you know, something that's inappropriate. You consummate with it. The same is true when we use the right words, when we use words of charity. Or when we reject things, the temptations. I mean, it's kind of the same way with temptation in general. When you give in, it has now become like you've given yourself over to that temptation. So certainly when we're talking about the Lord, we all want to always train ourselves with the words that we use. And I think good habits can be to adjust your vernacular so that you use phrases that are the kind of things you hope the person you want to become, they would use words like this. You know, like, say, when something good happens, praise God. Mm-hmm. Don't just say awesome. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with saying awesome. But it's better to say praise God. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a friend who, whenever you meet him, it's like, hey, Patrick, how you doing? He would always say, or how are you? He'd say, truly, truly blessed and highly favored. That's what he said every time, no mm-hmm. matter what. And it's like, what a great thing to say, because it's a great reminder that, oh, yeah, you are. The other day I was listening to Father John Ricardo, and he was talking about words, and he said, especially with taking the Lord's name in vain, that he thinks the Lord's name is taken in vain more in the Mass than any other time. Because taking the Lord's name in vain doesn't mean that you said it out of anger or with wrath or with bad intention. It just means that you do it flippantly, that you're not doing it, you're not using his name with respect. You're not saying his name, you know, like, properly.
Reverently.
And we say his name all the time in the Mass, and, you know, like, we're just kind of, like, nonchalantly going through it. I mean, I know I do it. I don't mean to.
Right.
But I thought he made a really good point that, like, wow. Yeah, I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I certainly don't want to or mean to, but, you know, when you go to Mass a lot, it has just a tendency to get habitual.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the process of trying to teach our children to use words reverently, you know, use certain words reverently and mm-hmm. with decorum, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, where, you know, if there's a older man in the room, my son should, address him as Mr. in his last name,
mm-hmm.
you know, with just good manners,
right?
And similarly, when we're praying or something like that, that we're not just using the Lord's name just irreverently, you know, mm-hmm. yelling it, screaming it, you know, doing what, you know, whatever. Like, what recently, Anna, she loves to sing and loves to dance,
uh-huh.
and clap her hands and just
yeah. She loves to just get it all out.
Right. She is
animated. She's got joy, 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 joy down in her heart, baby.
Down in her heart.
And she wants to get it out. Right. Oh, baby.
But, you know, when we're kneeling before the bed and we're praying, uh-huh. that is not the time to be doing such things.
Yeah. It's not like time for to be excited. And
I right. mean, and so I was trying, you know, I was teaching.
Rambunctious.
You know, I was talking to her and I was saying, you know, when we using the word reverent, because we that's the word of the month for us is just reverence, nice. You know. And so I'm just continually telling her, you know, we don't use that word. We don't use prayers irreverently. We do things for a specific intention. We're intentional about how we pray. And so our outward disposition reflects our interior motives.
Yes.
And I used that exact phrase with her. No, I'm just joking. Because she'd really understand that.
Okay. But that's a great point because it goes both ways. And that our actions inform our words, our language, and our language informs our actions. They both train each other. So if we're using bad language, it's going to eventually become bad behavior. If we're using good behavior, that has a way of training us into using eventually better language.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly when it comes to the way we address and speak of our Lord, we need to be very conscientious of what we allow into our home.
People used to die just for saying the Lord's name out loud.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a big deal. It's in the Ten Commandments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is like one of the things like I don't watch movies that take the Lord's name in vain anymore. I just decided there is no movie that's worth, at my judgment, you know, the Lord sitting there going, really? This is the third time you've watched this movie? You know, you're fine with the things, the way they treat me?
What if the movie degraded your wife?
Right.
You know, what if like, you know, in the movie, this hypothetical situation, it starts talking about like...
It had...
Demeaning your wife.
Yeah, specifically her.
Yeah, Pamela, Lady
right.
Pamela.
Right.
You would not watch that movie.
No, absolutely not.
But what about your Lord and Savior?
Yeah, how much more important? So we just have to be conscientious.
That's a
we
tough
have to
one,
think
man.
About
that
it.
Is so tough.
But movies are just not worth it.
They're not. You're right. They're not.
So then the language we use about others. This one is even harder. I think it's kind of clear cut when it comes to how we address the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But often others, that's where I find myself like, oh, I'm in a gray area here. You know what I mean? Like,
I struggle with it as well.
Because, okay, let's say you need to you're speaking critically of something, you know, whatever it is. It's like, well, does it need to be said? Maybe it does. Maybe someone is about to hire a contractor who you know is like, oh, you really shouldn't hire that guy. Like, he has a reputation for ripping people off. He takes advantage of, like, I need to tell you that so that you don't, you know, okay, that's might be a necessary situation. But if you're just like, oh man, have you guys heard about contractor so-and-so? He's the worst. Blah, blah, blah. I hear he just screws people over, you know, and like that, well, there's no reason for that. Right. Now all of a sudden, what you're really doing is poisoning yourself. You are giving in and consummating with this idea of tearing other people down. And you're really tearing yourself down. You are poisoning your soul by giving in to these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't separate your words and your actions. They're the same. Speaking words are an action.
Yeah, they're your intellect manifested.
Right. So that's just something. It's Lent.
I think that's true. I don't
give it up for Lent. Like, see if you can do this. Don't ever say anything uncharitable or critical even about another person unless it just really needs to be said. And it's hard. You'll say, I'm going to do this, and then you'll realize, oh, man, I just had a long conversation, actually, that didn't need to be had.
This week, I had to apologize for doing so.
Well, I mean, that happens to me a lot. And then... it does get challenging when other people bring it up and you're like, I'm not sure what to do. But I have a story that actually happened at Clear Creek. I want to tell because I thought it was like, you know what? That's how you do it right there.
Okay.
So this is the end of the show. You got to go subscribe to our podcast to get the rest of this episode.
More on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
So, the Clear Creek Workday was this last weekend. I love the Clear Creek Workday. getting to go out and serve the monks, do some fun projects too, use chainsaws.
Working with your hands.
Right. Get to like do things that you wouldn't otherwise get to do. So I'm in this group and one of the guys wasn't there. And the other guys kind of started like just joking around about him because this other guy, his, you know, like. Anyway, my father-in-law stepped in and goes, "Hey, guys, I don't want to hear any of that. We don't need to have any of that kind of talk." And I was like, "Way to go, Dan." You know, and like he knew, hey, we don't need to be saying any, like, this is exactly what we're talking about. He knew this isn't going to help anybody. And he also knew that none of the other guys, nobody was trying to like be vicious or, mm-hmm. you know, be mean.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly wasn't building anybody up. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And so I just, that was just a great example for me of like, that's what you do. Oh, that's how you behave in that situation. Because that is a kind of a tough situation when somebody comes up to you and, it's like, and they start, you know, kind of the backbiting. And, you know, you have to have the guts to like stand up to them, which can be incredibly hard. You know what I mean? You have to say like, hey, you just need to like move on. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to take practice. But
holding your tongue on things like that definitely has to uh-huh. takes practice. It also takes intentionality. Like, you know, we've said on the show many times where growing in the spiritual life, a lot of it has to do with just saying, stopping, think about what you're doing right now, and is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, wait, stop. What are you doing right now? Is it good or is it bad?
Mm-hmm.
And that happens with conversations, that happens with emails, that happens with text messages, that happens with
eating. So, like, that's the thing is, I think words are another form of appetite. Like, I think that they kind of, because you can be temperate with your words. And so mm-hmm. if it's temperance.
Yeah, you can have an appetite to like gossip or like
yeah.
get the skinny.
You don't think things. About it. Yeah, exactly. Get the like, oh, hey, what's the inside word? You know,
right.
like, oh, who's, you know, like, yeah, what's the gossip on anybody here in the office?
Mm-hmm. I think that's, but it's tough to, because it also is a little bit intoxicating.
Right.
Right, it is because you also feel it's like, oh, I just got to vent about this,
mm-hmm.
This person, or can you believe he does it this way, or you know, whatever it is, and then you feel better about it. It's like, good, I got that off my chest.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't good. It was like That's a struggle.
That kind of thing is very similar to rationalized behavior. So when you rationalize a decision. You choose something that you know isn't right, and you need a constantly expanding base of peer approval in order for you to continue this rationalization. So in your mind, you have really tricked yourself into thinking, yeah, that was a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
But in your subconscious, you know it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But so you need peer approval. It's like, oh, Adam, you thought I made the right choice, right? And you'd be like, oh, yeah, Dave, you made a great choice. And it's like, all right, good. And I feel fine about it for a minute until... It's like, well, Jim, you also thought I was the right. And Jim's like, yeah, it was a good choice. Like, okay, good. And so I need this constantly expanding base. The same is true with gossip. You kind of like, you're not satisfied when you receive the gossip. Oh, I need to tell somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I told somebody. That makes me feel good. Until it's like, well, I want to tell somebody else. And so you also need this constantly expanding base of peer approval, sort of, until finally someone says, like, hey, that's none of your business. Quit talking about that guy that way. And then you get kind of mad at him, like, ugh, who are you to tell me who to talk about? You know what I heard about you? You know?
Right.
So there's kind of some similarities there. Anything else before we move on to the way we talk about ourselves?
Mm-mm.
So, did I ever read this? That's okay. There's tons of Bible verses about this. But the way we talk about ourselves, this is also really hard. This is where the virtue of humility comes in.
Super easy for you.
I mean, obviously I've got that down, but I mean, I can tell by other, in other people that it, look, it seems hard for them. Like when I watch you, Adam,
yeah, I'm a prime example.
Looks so hard.
I understand.
I pray for you.
Thank you so much.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. I'll keep praying. Don't worry.
Please don't stop.
You're right. But when the way we, flatter ourselves, the way we like talk about our own accomplishments, this is really hard not to do. And like I'm saying at the beginning of this episode, I am not good at any of this, but I'm working on it. I'm like, at least I'm trying, you know what I mean? And someone might say like, look, I've got a lot of other, you know, a lot of other things in, like in my spiritual life or whatever. Like, this isn't that important. I've got other things. Like, I'm just, I'm trying to be a saint. I want to, when I get to heaven, I don't want to, I want to have less things to regret, not more. So I'm not okay. I'm not okay with like aiming at a certain level. And it's like, okay, once I get to that level of holiness, that'll be good. I want all of it, right? I'm going all the way.
You can't be a half saint.
No. So it's important to embrace everything.
All aspects.
Right.
Yes. It's really hard. You know, it's like the litany of humility when you pray, like, from the desire of being esteemed, deliver me, Jesus.
Right.
You know, I mean, those kind
of
things.
In the opinion of the world, let others increase and
I go unnoticed.
Yeah, and I decrease.
Yeah. Those are the hard things, especially whenever you're looking up to other people and you want them to acknowledge you. And I can imagine the temptation that people in the academic world have with this, right? Because when you're in the academic world, that's the temptation, right? Is like, oh, well, did you see the paper that I just published about this article, or did you see this reflection that I had on St. Thomas Aquinas doing that with such and such, and you're wanting to use it as a way of like trying to open up the conversation, but really what you're trying to do is like, hey, I belong. Because we all want to belong. We all have a desire to be loved,
right,
and we want to be loved, and we want to and to love, right? So if we're trying our best to be a part of something, and so that way that we can also, oh well, good, I'm part of this now, well, I love this too. So it's, I mean, that's just a kind of a human desire, right? So I can just see how in the academic world or in the professional world, when you're trying to, you know, be like, hey, I belong here. You're trying to make a name for yourself, so to speak.
Yeah.
I remember when I first got out of college, that was a constant temptation. I didn't really fight the temptation. I was not living super virtuously, or didn't even like really consider it,
right,
to be honest with you. But yeah. I would be in meetings and I would want to say something to make it sound like that, hey, I belong here.
Right.
You know, I carry my weight, so to speak. And those are temptations for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And there's such a balancing act because your reputation is something that you should consider. You know, you actually should, like with the litany of humility, I think that there's a kind of misconception that we should not care about our reputation at all. That we should just let it get dragged through the gutter. You know what I mean? And
I don't know.
And that's actually not true. You should care about your reputation, but you shouldn't care about it for its own sake. You care about your reputation because when you say, "I love Jesus," that needs to mean something. If your reputation is worthless, then so is your testimony to Christ. So,
I mean, I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying? Now,
I definitely see what you're saying, but, you know, Christ gave the opposite example, right? He was being accused and he remained silent.
I'm not saying that you have to speak up all the time in order to defend your reputation, because your actions will speak a lot louder.
Because it really actually doesn't matter what your reputation to the world is, as long as, I mean, because the world doesn't mean, your reputation in the world would not mean near as much as...
Well, if you live virtuously, your reputation will probably take care of itself.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
But there is, I think, a misconception that's easy to easy to kind of get when you read the Litany of Humility. It's that would say, oh, your reputation, you know, just destroy it, essentially.
Don't be like, don't go out of your, I mean, don't,
you know what I mean?
Actively.
We do actually care about our reputation.
Sure.
We want to strive for a good one. How do you do that? By living virtuously. Mm-hmm. We don't want a good reputation for its own sake.
Right.
But I think there's another kind of notion, and this is like less to do with words, but it kind of has to do with the success that, oh, we should be striving for we should be successful at work, as successful as we possibly can be. And we want to do all things well, and we do want to be successful at the things that we do, but not necessarily as maximally successful as possible.
You have to have the end in mind,
because and you will end up sacrificing other things. You know, like, oh, I need to make more money. I need to make as much money as I can at my job. Well, maybe that's not true. And that's just not, even in Catholic circles, I think that's probably not a very popular opinion. I'll tell you, here's another good one. When it comes to fundraising for Catholic organizations, the fundraisers would tell you, you need to raise all the money you can. Mm-hmm. Because if you had more money, you could do more, right? It's like, well, yeah, but maybe I'm not called to do more. Christ hasn't called me to do as much as I can. He's called me to do some very specific service. I want to do that and only that. I don't want to do more than that, because now it's me acting, not him. Mm-hmm. I want only him. And so, I don't know, that's just kind of like another not popular opinion. I actually don't think you should raise as much money as you can. I think you should raise exactly the amount of money that Christ calls you to and no more. But when it, that just kind of like, I was thinking about the Litany.
Patreon.com/TheCatholicMan Yeah, Show.
With that, I know. Support us on Patreon. But just thinking about the Litany of Humility and just like how it does. It's such a beautiful, powerful prayer to orient your own internal attitude, but we have to be able to
every
have
time
these
I
words.
Pray that prayer, like at the very end, I end like internal, like it, internally, like just saying like for the desire to actually desire these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because throughout, like, if I was being honest with myself, and I'm sitting here going through the litany of,
no, I don't desire that.
I don't.
But that's why you're praying it, like,
right, for the desire,
for the grace to desire it.
Right,
right. And you're not even praying that it would happen. You're not even
right. That's a great point.
I mean,
sure.
It's not that you want others to be receive recognition and you to go unnoticed, but you want to desire it, right? Because I have a job where, like, I get paid based. A lot of it is based on my reputation. You know,
mm-hmm.
am I trustworthy? Am I going to give good advice? You know, or am I just going to like ruin somebody? So I need to have a good reputation or I'll be out of a job.
Right.
But I still want to have that charity in my heart where I want I desire the success of others before I desire my own success. And I can trust in that because it comes from God and he will take care of me. I firmly, you know, like I know that. But the words that we use about ourselves, I think, are particularly uplifting or degrading. If we are trying to build ourselves up, they will have the opposite effect and they will actually degrade us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
personally, a lot of times when I try to build myself up, it is a sense of, because I feel like I want to belong.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Which is a normal thing.
That's like just in a self-reflective mode. That's when I try to build myself up. Even on a natural level,
I think if you look at people who are most successful in life, they tend to be the people who spend all their time building up the people around them.
Sure. Yeah. Have you read Good to Great? Have you read that book?
No.
When you start at great, I mean, you know, I can't even relate to that book.
That has no relevance for me.
But he talks about like the fifth level of leadership, and you can always recognize like the highest level of leadership whenever it's never about him. It's never about that or her. It's never about the person. It's always about like we as a team accomplished this.
Uh-huh.
And I was very lucky to be in the position that I was because of the people that I was surrounded by.
Right. And you just spend your time building them up.
Right.
So just
and think, that's what I
on just a natural level, like that we're not even talking about the spiritual life.
Right. I mean, that's what I was doing in football, like at, as the quarterback of a football team. Like when you're a leader of a sports team, yeah. your goal is to build everybody up, to rally people together, to be a teammate, mm-hmm. right? You know, to accomplish the mission together. This is one of the I think the virtues that are really highlighted in sports, right? Is that there are leaders and natural leaders in sports, mm-hmm. and though the best leaders, regardless of whether they're the best athlete or not, the best leaders are the ones who build up the other people. And it's and you always can recognize this whenever they're doing interviews afterwards or something like that. It's never about, I threw for 300 yards. That's why we won. It was that, no, my line blocked really well for me. Did you see the running back make that cut on the 20-yard line? That's what got us
totally.
There. So those are the type of people that build other people up. Those are the level five leaders that book
goes to. So humility is speaking rightly about yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not speaking less about yourself or speaking about yourself less, as you might often hear. I think it's kind of a silly phrase, but it's speaking rightly about yourself and understanding rightly about yourself. So if you acknowledge one of your gifts, then you need to do so, at least internally, with the recognition that this is a gift given to you,
mm-hmm.
that you didn't achieve that gift. You didn't create that skill by yourself. It was something given to you from your Heavenly Father. And so that comes back once again, full circle, to the words we use, praise God, you know, because we need to have that recognition towards Him for all the things that all of our positive things and all of our negative things. We can say, by God's grace, I will persevere, or by, you know, whatever. So there are, think about the words we use. Think about some phrases that you've maybe heard other people use that you would like to adopt, and consider for Lent giving up. See if you can go until Easter and hopefully beyond without saying a single critical thing about another person that doesn't absolutely have to be said. Be a challenge.
Your hair looks terrible, by the way.
Thank you.
That needed to be said.
I told my wife today I need a haircut. And by God's grace, I will get one.
All right. What did you think about this whiskey?
It's fine.
It's a mixer.
Yeah.
Throw some Coke in it or whatever.
It is a mixer.
Yeah.
Sweet bottle, though.
It will definitely stay in
the told studio. You about the bottle.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. I'm good. I'm exhausted. I was tired before we even started the show.
Okay.